A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Attention, whatever you're wearing right now, well, Mack Weldon is better.
Oh, Matt, let me tell you about Mack Weldon. It's a man's essential brand. I guess men's essentials is what it is, but it's also an essential brand.
It's for the single man and the plurality of men in general.
Oh, it's a brand that believes in smart design, premium fabrics, and simple shopping.
I've shopped on there countless times. Always, it has been with great ease and satisfaction.
It's a very easy website to navigate with great pictures, too. And you're also, the sizing chart I find to be one of the more accurate sizing charts.
Ooh, and if you're a Bond fan, which I presume you are, they have a line of Vesper polos that model the Bond polo collection.
Oh, guys, they are really the greatest thing going. I am currently enjoying the silver underwear. They also make shirts, and they're naturally antimicrobial. That means they eliminate odor, guys. They whisk it away.
They want you to be comfortable. So if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it, soils and all, and they will still refund you. No questions asked.
Oh, I guess the best thing for people to do right now who are listening to this James Bond podcast and want to just be wearing the finest fabrics known to man, even under their clothes, is just go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off. All you have to do is use the promo code BONDING. That's MackWeldon.com and get 20% off. What's that promo code, Matt?
BONDING! Hey, let us tell you about an amazing podcast from Stitcher called Dear Franklin Jones.
Growing up, reporter Jonathan Hirsch's family was a little different.
They followed a controversial spiritual leader named Franklin Jones.
To Jonathan's parents, Franklin Jones was a god, but to people outside the group, he was a cult leader.
Can he not be both? Join Jonathan on a journey to find out what really happened and whether the group really did become a cult.
You can binge all the episodes now before the season finale airs this week. You can listen to all 7 episodes of Dear Franklin Jones in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Franklin Jones commands you. Hello, listeners. This is a very special episode of James Bonding because we're doing a crossover episodes with past guest favorites Maria Blasucci and Amanda Lund. This is their show called The Big Ones, and they had us on to discuss a huge moral dilemma of the James Bond universe, Vesper Lynn's dilemma from Casino Royale. So, it will be here in this feed. Also, go to their feed at The Big Ones, subscribe, and enjoy.
Yeah, and you'll get it without this intro.
So two versions.
It's really fascinating how we did this. I'm really impressed by all of us.
Enjoy.
Hi, this is
The Big Ones.
And I'm Maria Blasucci.
And I'm Amanda Lund.
Each week we discuss new moral dilemmas ranging from historical decisions to relationship problems to brain-busting moral questions.
The questions can be confusing, but they are always fun to talk about because they force you to look deep, deep, deep within inside yourself.
Will you like what you see, Matt Gourley and Matt Myra?
With inside yourself? I love it.
And we have to say, just for our James Bonding listeners who are new to The Big Ones, Maria messes up the intro every time, so it's a real...
But I think I did it pretty well this time.
I think so too, but I don't know how well you sold it to people who are just listening to the podcast.
Oh, it sounded like I was trying to get... each week we discuss new moral dilemmas ranging from relationship problems. No, see, it just is too much.
Can
but
you do it and like sell it, like to get people's attention?
Hi.
That had a shoulder shrug.
Oh, hey. Welcome to The Big Ones. Each week, we discuss new ethical questions ranging from historical dilemmas to relationship problems. even a brain-busting moral question.
Wow, it's so casual.
You're doing this intro like you're the bartender in Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Eddie Valiant.
Well, I mean, I'm selling it, but who cares? You know, that's my, it's come on in and have a seat, but you know, no pressure.
This is casual Saturday morning podcast.
Yeah, that's so true. Well, thanks, boys, for being on.
Thanks for having us.
We're super glad to be here.
Thanks to all the James Bonding listeners that are listening in. We have been James Bonding fans since the beginning of time, and we've been listeners and guests. Mm-hmm. On James Bonding, uh-huh. And we're just so happy to have you guys now on the. We've turned the table literally, and we're sitting around a table whose legs are straight up in the ceiling. So thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's nice for us to come on your podcast mm-hmm. for once, and I hope this crossover is the first of many to come.
It's really exciting for Matt and I to talk about morality.
Especially through the filter of James Bond.
Well, because James Bond seems to be a character that has little actual morals.
Yeah.
I think that's true. And I feel like, mm-hmm. But there is a line even for him that mm-hmm. he will not cross.
And that line is what?
Killing children?
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
He won't kill kids.
Well, it depends on the era.
He doesn't kill good people. Does he ever kill good people?
No.
There is collateral damage, of course, that happens, but I think he kills naughty people.
He's the perfect guy for the job. He's the perfect guy for the job because he knows the task at hand. Mm-hmm. He sees black and white. Like, it's good and it's bad. If it's bad, he doesn't look at the nuance and he doesn't go like, well, but maybe they had a rough childhood. He just goes, they're bad right now. They got to die.
Yeah.
You know? And so he's the perfect guy for the job. You know, Amanda, you'd like him because he doesn't try to find loopholes.
Mm. Oh, I like that. I really do. And he's also not a slave to his government. So he's not going to do something just because Dame Judi Dench tells him to.
Right.
You know, and I do appreciate someone who's an independent thinker because I think, being a follower can be bad for morality.
I love the thought that maybe Dame Judi Dench and not M is the one kind of like saying, hey, Bond, can you get this done for me?
I don't know if you know this, but once you're knighted as an actor or actress in the United Kingdom, you are actually given a secret agent at your disposal.
Oh, God. Wouldn't that be nice?
Like Sir Patrick Stewart right now probably has some guy out doing some errand for him.
Yeah.
That's so nice.
Because he can use the guy as a spy or just as a personal assistant.
Yeah, totally, 100%.
We need something like that in the States.
Yeah, we need a feudal system. Yeah. There's not enough of a class delineation here in the United States.
I think we need to really give
us all titles.
What would they call us if they did? If they
Republicans.
Or just, I mean,
I guess Senator.
Yeah, Senator. Senator Maria. Senator Maria Vlasucci.
Well, we like to start each episode by asking our guests if they have any sort of little big one, some sort of small moral dilemma they've been dealing with in their own lives. But since this is a special James Bond episode, why don't we talk about one of James Bond's little dilemmas?
Well, this is literally a little dilemma.
Okay, interesting.
And in the film, The Man with the Golden Gun, he kills the main villain and his henchman still survives at the last part of the film. And attacks him and tries to kill Bond, but his henchman is Hervé Villechaize, who's Knick Knack, and he's a little person. Mm-hmm. So Bond has probably every right, and in every other movie, he would kill the henchman. Mm-hmm. And that would be the last scene of the film. It often ends with the henchman getting killed after the main villain. He doesn't kill Hervé Villechaize, presumably because we sympathize with him because he's a little person or something. I don't know. But he puts him in a suitcase and then, like, puts him in a net up in the crow's nest of this Chinese junk ship. So, should he be able to kill Hervé Villechaize, or does it look weird for him to kill a little person?
Wow, what looks weirder, putting him in a suitcase?
I think that's public humiliation, which in some ways is worse. This is interesting because it's like, is it okay for... because Bond kills women and stuff.
He has on occasion. And is it more, in a way, bigoted for him not to kill him?
Mm, that's interesting. Well, let me ask you this. Where's that junk boat going, and will he ever get out of that suitcase?
He's out of the suitcase.
Yeah, so
he just uses the suitcase to get him up in the crow's nest.
Yeah, so he uses the suitcase, essentially. And off screen, at some point, James Bond climbs the crow's nest holding a suitcase with a human being in it.
Uh-huh.
presumably a struggling human being who's probably knocking the balance of the suitcase off. Yes. So it's very dangerous. And James Bond's like climbing the crow's nest of this ship. It's like at a tall mast. Mm. And he puts, he probably just opens up the suitcase and like dumps Harvey Villiches into the net.
None of this is on camera.
Oh, but you think he does that? You don't think he just puts the suitcase up there?
No, he doesn't. We see Harvey out of the net, out of the suitcase, up in the, trapped in the crow's nest. Where he, you know, presumably, if the ship is going to be at sea for a couple of days before it reaches mainland, he may dehydrate. He obviously doesn't have access to food or water, mm-hmm. And I think it would be a slow, painful, and humiliating death.
Yeah,
where a very angry Frenchman is yelling down at you constantly.
Mm-hmm. I'm bringing it up on the video here, so if you get a chance, it's probably on YouTube. The final scene of Man with the Golden Gun.
Yeah, so now
it's just a long crane
shot.
That
ship is setting sail for where we know not.
Okay, there he is.
Yeah, that's not so bad because he's got getting fresh air and someone will let him cut him down.
He looks relaxed. He looks like he's finally got a moment to himself because I don't know what he did throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah,
but
sure.
He
created mayhem and tried to kill Bond multiple times.
He did. Okay, so this is, to me, when you really boil down this moral dilemma, it's that, is it ethical, even if someone is evil, is it ethical to kill someone when they're not your physical match?
Right, right. Yeah, that's a better way to put it.
I mean, it's one thing if, what's his character's name?
Nick Knack.
Nick Knack had a gun, and Bond wanted to, you know, shot him before he got shot. But is it ethical if they were just going mano-y-mano, you know, even though this guy's naughty?
Nick Knack does have a series of weapons.
Knife,
he does have a knife in his teeth, but he's throwing wine bottle and champagne bottles.
Oh, so he's a thrower.
I think it's immoral for Bond to put Nick Knack in the net because I think out of respect for Nick Knack as a villain, Bond should have killed him. Because this is making fun of him and publicly.
Yeah. I don't understand. Yeah. How did he get out? When did he get put in the suitcase and when did he get out of the suitcase?
We don't see it. It happens off screen.
It ends with him getting him in the suitcase.
Uh-huh.
And then it just cuts to them in bed. Like the day has been won. And then it's a long crane shot that shows Nick Knack in the crow's nest. And then it like pans
But we
out.
Don't see him put him in the crow's nest.
So you think Nick Knack may have put himself in the crow's nest?
No.
Well, what? I don't understand.
He's imprisoned up there. He's in like a little wicker cage.
But I don't understand how you're thinking, Matt. Yeah. You said that you think that he took the luggage up to the crow's nest, dumped him out.
No, you don't think that?
No, he put him in the wicker cage and then like hoisted him up.
No, Bond doesn't do that stuff. He's too busy. I know what Bond did. He had him in the suitcase. He gave him to someone working on the ship.
No, there's no one else on the ship.
Well, then Nick Knack got out and I'm telling you, he is taking time for himself.
No way.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
No.
So do you think it's more of
he
like
he would try to kill Bond again if he got free.
Oh my gosh, I know what's going on. So who knows where that ship is going to end up. Nick Knack put himself up there to make it seem like he's been captured and he's a victim.
So that one of you guys, you, Matt Gourley, are going to go get him because you're going to feel bad.
He's already been captured. And if he gets out again, he's going to try to kill Bond again. He's really pissed because Bond killed his master and blew up the island that he was supposed to inherit.
So does Nick Knack have mental capabilities?
Yeah.
He's fine mentally.
Yeah.
Okay, then he should have been killed.
I don't get it. What do we see Bond do? We see him put him in a suitcase.
Yeah.
But then there's passage of time. Like
okay, but what's the last shot? What's the last shot we see of Bond?
He's in a wicker cage.
Bond and him together.
No, yeah, Bond and him together.
Is him closing the suitcase.
And then that's it. And next thing we see.
Yep, him in the crow's nest. Yep.
I'm telling you. Well, who's driving the ship?
No, there's a little thing where the woman Bond's with goes, oh, you're not going to throw him overboard. And so you kind of like, is he going to kill him? And then it cuts like almost like the reveal that he's put him in this wicker cage.
Okay, well,
But I think there's actually an element of the time in this because in the 70s, it would have seemed more humanitarian to not kill him. But these days, it is a little like, what's the word? Like
everyone's
ableist.
Free game.
Yeah, to say like we have to. I think maybe, I don't know, but maybe would some little people find, take offense that he wasn't killed like any other person?
I mean, maybe I would, because I'd be like, hey, why am I the exception? Yeah, that would be weird to me, I guess, that I would be the only one. And then instead of being killed, just put up like a flag waving in the wind.
But Bond never executes people. Like, well, rarely does he execute people.
Yeah. But they're usually his counterparts.
Yes, and it's usually when Bond does kill a henchman, it's always, I think, in the act of a fight.
Right. And they weren't fighting when he put him in the
suitcase?
So the fight
is won. Yes, they were fighting.
They were fighting,
but the fight was won when he put him in the...
That's true.
When he put him in the suitcase with no way to get out. So he's not going to, like, fire his gun into the suitcase.
He should have just killed him. Bond should have never put him in a suitcase because there's other ways to overtake him that aren't, like, playing to his little...
But he also uses a suitcase as a shield against the wine. And then he just kind of closes in on him and then, like,
okay, well, that's all fine, but then throw it overboard.
So drown him.
I don't think that's right.
But he's trying to kill him. I'm saying why put him in the suitcase and then unzip the suitcase up?
Right.
First of all, I don't know how Bond got up that high with a suitcase.
I think he hoisted him.
We'll never know.
That's so crazy.
But that's what a rigging with a sail is like. They have all the pulleys and all that.
Then how did he get out of the suitcase?
He let him out of the suitcase, put him in the wicker cage, and hoisted him up.
See, probably. That seems crazy. That seems rude. That seems like really awful to me. That Bond thought, here's what I'm going to do. Now that I got him in this suitcase, let's see what else I can do to him. Oh, here's a basket.
Because you could have just left him in the suitcase in wine storage. But like then, in a cool, dark place.
But then he doesn't have air. Like this, actually, you may be right, Amanda. He has fresh air.
I've honestly, looking at that video of him... in that whatever he's in that net looking out onto the ocean, I've never seen anyone look so peaceful in my life. I mean it. So I don't know, but I think you need to fight. So you know, to defend yourself is one thing, to humiliate someone is another.
The interesting thing is that there are actual like precedents for this. So in other Bond movies, at the very end, after the villain's killed, the henchmen show up literally on boats, like in Diamonds Are Forever, on a train in Live and Let Die. And every time, Bond kills the henchmen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He should have killed him, I think. Amanda?
I think it's much more respectful, and I'm thinking more kind of behind the scenes now, to give someone a triumphant death scene. You know, if you're a great, and you know, I feel this way for some of the female villains as well. It's kind of like you earn a death scene when you're playing a henchman.
Yeah, yeah. You shouldn't just be locked away and then put up.
Well, but would you watch this and it would feel weird to see Nick Nack kill? That's the other thing. Even though he's a bad guy, he's lovable.
Well, here's how you do it.
Yeah.
If you want to do it, if you want to have Nick Nack die, he should be hoisted by his own petard. Like he should be shooting Bond, but accidentally hit a helium tank he's next to and blow himself up accidentally.
Or that he shoots something, hoisted up, and then he just has to stay up there, and it was his own doing, and he went, oh, look what I did.
Whoops.
Well, but
I cut the wrong rope.
What? Throughout the movie, you're saying he's lovable. So is he not like other henchmen where he's...
He's mischievous, and like, he's not a huge threat.
And I mean, so Bond knows that. So he doesn't want to kill him. So that's another thing. It's like if Bond can see the good in him, although this takes... Okay, well, this takes away from what I said at the beginning where Bond sees black and white. Because now if he sees a little lovability in Nick Nack, then and he goes, well, I'm just going to put him in a suitcase.
I wonder... I don't think he sees lovability. Bond is a sporting man. And like you said, Amanda, like I think he realizes he could easily dispatch him. So it's almost not fair.
Yeah, I think once Nick Nack has been disarmed, Bond's not going to kill him at that point.
Mm-hmm. So why not just put him out to sea with like a ring around him, you know?
I mean, I think it's because that's been done and the writers were like,
think that's worse, right?
Yeah,
at least when he's on the boat,
I guess he's presumably going to jail. Like they're going to dock somewhere and he's going to take him to jail. So I guess actually it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, this is his last bout of freedom and he's taking in this. He's going to have this memory for the rest of his life when he's behind bars. He's going to have the memory of sailing through the open water at the top of a ship.
Did you call it freedom? He's in a wicker cage.
I've never looked as free as he looked in those moments. I'm not kidding.
But I do think what we're really talking here is like in the rules of combat, is it right to play on your opponent's weaknesses that are not like, oh, they're wounded because I stabbed them in the leg. Oh, no, this person doesn't have a leg. Uh-huh. So is it fair for me to, you know, should I then bind my own leg up So we're evenly matched.
It goes to that old saying, all's fair in love and war.
Yes.
You're right, though. That's...
But you can't, if someone's trying to kill you, if someone has ill will against you, then you take whatever you have to fight back against them.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, if someone attacks you, then I guess it's interesting because isn't there that story with the Revolutionary War where the British soldiers would go into a field in formation and march at the Minutemen and all that? The American fighters would just hide behind trees and pluck them off. It was the first time like guerrilla warfare really became a thing. And it was like I think the British are like, you're not fighting like men. But then the Americans were going like, well, you're invading our country.
Interesting.
But then the British were like, it's our country, guys.
And really, it's not your country anyway. It's these guys over here.
Well, that's a whole other big one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think James Bond thought he was doing what was right by hoisting Knick-Knack up the pole. I think that although it was humiliating and did seem to kind of play on, you know, Knick-Knack being small, I do think it was the right thing to do.
Yeah, I guess maybe if they're taking him to jail, if there's people on the ship that are taking him to jail and that's like his imprisonment until he gets to jail, then I see that being an okay thing of like, well, he's not going to get out of this. So
it's interesting. Whenever he's faced female henchmen, he's killed them.
Mm-hmm.
Do they ever have hand-to-hand combat?
Yeah, in GoldenEye, he fights with Xenia Onatopp and he basically... What does he do? He like attaches her.
He clips her into a helicopter,
and
he clips her into the cable from the helicopter, and then he shoots down the helicopter.
Oh my god!
So that she gets yanked away. And she's killed.
I don't think he means to throw her into a tree.
It was a way for them to kind of have a fitting end, but he wasn't totally
she gets squeezed. Her thing is squeezing people to death with her legs. She kills people. Okay.
Oh my god. Okay.
So then he ends up getting her squeezed to death by shooting a helicopter down and her getting pulled into a tree, up against the tree, and the helicopter squeezes her to death.
And what about Thunderball, which will be the next episode of James Bonding that you guys are on? Mm-hmm. And he is dancing with the villainous henchwoman, and he's about to be shot, and right at the last minute, he turns her, and she gets shot.
She didn't seem like a henchwoman to me, though. She seemed like just a villain.
Like a legit villain.
Yeah.
She was a co-villain.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly, I would say that she was more of a villain than the Eye Patch Man. And honestly, I think we might find something out that maybe she was the one behind the nuclear...
Oh, her plan, you mean?
I'd love to see a movie where you see the ship dock and then Knick-Knack gets out and you see where he goes.
A sequel.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's still theoretically out there.
There is talk that the actor stayed on that boat and it landed at Fantasy Island.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and then he became Ricardo Montalban.
God, I love that. That's the one fan theory that I think I will...
That's nice because that makes sense. And then because he's reformed when he's in Fantasy Island and he's very and because he's already been a henchman, that's why he can be such a good henchman.
Yes, and he also
and he's so good at looking out because he was up in that crow's nest that now he can spot planes.
Yeah.
He's also partnering up with someone that looks exactly like Scaramanga, even wearing the same suit.
Correct.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it's all part of the
The
charm of what happened.
Well, I think that's great. Well, I think then that all worked out for the best.
So I think we can all agree that James Bond did the right thing.
Well, there are levels of right thing, right?
Yeah.
There are subtle levels. Some things are more correct than others. And I think this was, given the circumstances, it was the...
The reason we brought this one in is because this is happening in our real lives. Both of us, Matt and I are experiencing this very same thing.
We've both been tracked by, it might be the same little person. We don't know. Yeah. But we just got to
fight them fair. They're just, we're all human beings.
Correct.
And if someone's coming at you, no matter their size or shape or disability or ability, you have to go at them if they come at you as hard as you can to protect yourself. It is not your fault that they came at you.
What if it's someone mentally challenged?
That's different.
Still, if they're trying to kill you,
but that's when I don't think deadly force should be used.
Yeah, in any way.
What if you're fighting back just to get them off and you kill them?
I guess if it is true self-defense.
Yeah. Like, what if they like have you down, they're strong, and they're about to kill you, like choke you to death?
Then I think you have, I think Maria's right. You have to defend yourself.
Well, what are you going to do? Just sit there and let them do it?
Morally, I shouldn't do anything. I know this is from your
upbringing. You got to do it. You didn't, you know, you got anything to defend yourself.
This is, but that's a harrowing and sad situation.
Of
this
course.
You guys really tackle the big stuff.
Yeah, these are the big ones.
Welcome to the big one.
This is obviously a Stand Your Ground podcast.
All right, well, now we'll get to the big one. And so this, I think, is going to be pretty familiar to all you James Bond listeners. And it's going to span across the James Bond universe to all those who maybe have not seen this particular James Bond movie.
Okay. You work for your government in a capacity where you have access to secrets. Your lover gets kidnapped by a terrorist organization in order to blackmail you into helping them with a diabolical plan. If you refuse to help, they will kill your lover violently. Do you cooperate with terrorists in order to save your lover's life?
This is the Vesper Lind dilemma.
So for those of you who don't know, who have not seen the greatest movie ever made of all time, Casino Royale, starring Daniel Craig, this is from that. Matt, do you have anything more to say about
it? So off the bat, first what we do is off the bat, we just go around and we say yes or no. Yes, we cooperate. No, we don't. And then we'll discuss and then come back to our answers at the end.
So can I ask a question? Like, I should be thinking of this as... I'm approached by this organization, mm-hmm. and you're kidnapped.
Yeah. I know.
You answer first.
It's so tough.
I say hell yeah. I cooperate.
Me too.
Say no.
I have a question.
Is that because you know Craig isn't listening to this?
Oh,
No. Because I say no because, well, we'll get into it, but off the bat, I say no.
What's your question?
I feel like I'll ask the question once we get into it.
So what's your answer off the bat? No.
Wow.
Now, there's this whole thing about how nations will not negotiate with terrorists regardless. And I believe that's a good policy for states. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's realistic for personal people.
What's the... but what's the consequence of her... of us doing this?
The terrorists win a huge windfall of money that they will then use to attack.
Okay, well then you obviously can't cooperate.
Hang on. I'm backtracking now.
Whoa.
Maybe they're not going to spend the money correctly. Like, essentially what you're saying is like, you're not like... I guess the moral quandary really is like, are they asking you to do anything that will directly cause harm? And the answer to that question is no. If you're just doing it to get them money, then you are not doing anything that will directly cause
harm. Let's say it's get them money for
what if they're getting
a plan that they have.
Well, they're not telling me that.
That does make it easier to justify to yourself.
To
it's not
cooperate.
Like if you were literally standing there and in one cage was your boyfriend and in the other cage was 3,000 people, mothers, like husbands, children, and they were like, we're gonna like blow up one of these cages. I think you would then be like, sorry, I've gotta like save all these people. But it is easier to justify in your own human nature.
I go into the cage with my boyfriend.
Yes, and you go down with the ship.
Get the other.
We'll see,
Yeah.
Blow up me, rather.
Blow us up and we'll go together. Yeah. That's what I would do too. And honestly, that's kind of what, spoiler, but Vesper does end up dying in a cage.
She does.
She does end up dying in a cage.
And so does Knick Knack. I have some bad news.
Oh, no. I thought he was on Fantasy Island. But I don't know what this money's for, right? They come to me, they're like...
Okay, well, that's being a little naive and being a little, like, closing your eyes to what's really there. Because this is a terrorist organization.
How well organized are they?
Okay, they are so well organized.
Terrorist organization. Yeah.
They're very well organized and they're very...
Tio?
It's Quantum. It's Spectre.
So it's Quantum. It's Spectre.
Yeah,
so,
they're super capable.
Here's my real... Like, I'm, like, wondering if, like... Oh, maybe they came up short this year and they're not going to be able to have a holiday.
Oh, this is
party.
For Christmas bonuses.
Yeah, they're not going to be able to have a holiday.
Amanda,
party.
You better get mad at
I know,
him
that's
because
a
she
loophole.
Gets mad at me
yeah,
when
you
I
can't
find
loophole.
Loopholes.
You have to assume that this is going to cause death and destruction.
Oh, no, but I don't
it's
think
just
no,
money.
But this is the thing. He's now trying desperately like anyone would to justify this to himself when he knows deep down that this money is going to fund the deaths of innocent people.
It's really
people.
A look into his psyche.
But it's going to fund it's going to, that maybe, listen, they're already bad at handling money. I know
how do you
this.
Know that?
Because
you don't know that.
Because they need more money.
No.
Because they need
no,
more money.
That's Lashif's problem.
But this is how terrorist organizations function. This is how they get their initial funding, is by doing this kind of stuff. Yeah.
Well,
so,
in that movie, in the Casino Royale, what is that whole talk about 9/11 that they do? Does that have anything to do
the
with
short
it?
Stocks, that's, because they plan the attack.
That's so, his first way of, he's trying to get money to fund terrorists. Organizations. Actually, he's a banker.
He's
for
an investor.
Terrorists.
Yeah,
and so he creates that explosion on that plane, so he can short sell his stocks beforehand and make a ton of money.
Lashif does.
Yes, on and that plane blowing up. Same thing he did on 9/11.
And does that have to do anything with what Vesper's dealing with?
Yeah, he's now, his plane scheme failed. Bond foiled it, mm-hmm. So he has to hold this poker game. And so Vesper's been sent to manage Bond's money, but what she's really doing is working for Quantum.
See, now, this is, I mean, do you see that maybe they've done some bad things then, and that they're going to do some bad things as well?
Yeah. Well,
it's a given.
They've done some bad things, sure. We all have.
They've done some great things,
they've
too.
They've done some wonderful things as well.
Like you said, the Christmas bonus.
The Christmas bonuses, the ice cream socials. Yeah. It's just a lot of fun. They're a great place to work for. They have open floor plans. No one has like walls in their office.
Razor scooters,
so nice.
Foosball tables.
There's ping pong. Lashif is really actually great at ping pong.
There's a podcasting booth.
They have
if you
so
want to go
fun
make your own podcast there.
Zach Braff is starring in a TV show about it.
Multicultural family.
It's really great.
That would be funny if that Zach Braff show was him actually working for a terrorist organization.
He was Lashif. He's like, fuck. I guess I'll start a podcast company. Yeah.
Terrorist 2.0 startup.
So, no, but it's, here's the real dilemma here, right? So, if Bond, not knowing, by the way, okay, they're trying to blow up that plane, which is a prototype plane. Now, I'm talking about the plot of Casino Royale.
Yeah, okay.
They're
not
at
really
the Miami.
Relevant to
they're
this.
Now at the Miami airport, right? And they try to blow up this plane. So, are we to understand that if Bond does not stop them and they blow up the plane, Lashif gets his money back? No poker game happens,
right.
And Vesper's is fine.
Oh, so
until
you're...
the next time they need something.
So essentially what you're telling me is that Quantum has, or Lashif or Spectre, I don't know who is in charge of getting a hold of Vesper.
Quantum.
Right? So it's Quantum.
Yeah.
But Quantum knows what Lashif's doing, hence them killing Lashif at the end of the movie.
Spoiler alert.
Or the middle
alert.
Of the movie.
Trigger warning.
But... Well, I guess sort of my question is like, I'm just trying to wrap my head around.
I know it's hard. And she did too. She tried to wrap her head around it too.
The conceptual like idea of like Lashif's backup plan, right? Oh no, I guess I'll organize a $10 million buy-in poker
it's
tournament.
It's his like scrambling. He's going to be killed if he doesn't get money.
I know, but what a weird...
Because he's like a... Remember, he's a chess genius. He's a brilliant poker player.
But why not like, I guess to get that much money that quickly.
Well,
but...
thank God he did, because it's a good movie.
Yeah, oh my God. Then we got a love story for the ages. I would not... Okay, so
we're putting ourselves in Vesper's shoes.
Yes, that's what we're doing. So just real quick, for maybe people who haven't seen Casino Royale, let's just set our characters real quick. So there's the gorgeous Vesper Linda.
Linda?
That's almost like my last name, Lund.
Yeah.
Wow, maybe I should change it.
Vesper
I already
Lund.
Changed it to Gorley. I'll change it back to Lind. But yeah, so she's gorgeous. How old is she? 32 or something?
Oh, girl.
Yeah, probably 30.
She's 30.
Might be 27.
Oh, no.
I think she might be 28 when she made the movie. I don't
28.
Remember.
Okay, oh my gosh.
I could be
28.
Wrong.
She looks great. Yeah, Eva.
She looks
Green.
Amazing. Okay. And then her boyfriend is a sexy.
We never see him.
Yousef. We do see him in Quantum.
Sexy Persian.
Sexy Persian man, but they also are their boyfriend girlfriend. So we know they're in love. He gave her this nice necklace.
Mm-hmm. The Algerian
in love,
knot.
Yes.
Love knot.
Yeah. The Algerian love knot. So should we do a little improv of getting the phone call?
I'd love to. So do you want to play Vesper? I'll play your best friend.
Okay.
Gina.
And you guys want to be the terrorist?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
And then you maybe one of you can also be your boyfriend.
Okay.
Okay. Vesper, oh my God. And then he took me to this restaurant.
Gina, I have so much work to do.
Where's your accent?
Oh, where am I from?
You
England, and you kind of talk like this.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Oh, you're getting a phone call.
Bring, bring.
Hello.
Hello, this is Mr. White.
Put it on speaker. Put it on speaker.
Sorry, 1 second. Hello.
Am I on speaker?
Yes.
Oh, I hate this speaker.
Yes, what can I do for you? I'm here with my friend Gina. We're having brunch.
Hi, I'm Gina.
Hi,
and
Gina.
I went on a date last night, and he bought me cheese.
Did you two get those little Q pins that we send out to everyone so we can all just talk hands-free?
Yes.
Oh, is that what that?
Put those on?
Is that what that is?
Okay,
I'll put it on.
Very good. All right, listen, I'm sitting here in Vienna or someplace, and boy, have I got a proposition for you gals.
Ooh. Oh, well, I'd love to hear it.
Also, Youssef is on the line. Say hi, Youssef.
Hello, do what they tell you.
Oh my gosh, Youssef, that's your boyfriend.
Yes.
Oh,
by the way, how was the cheese?
Oh, it was so good, Youssef. Youssef, thank you so much for those tickets to you two.
Of course.
You too?
Yes, we went to Youssef.
Bono's great.
Youssef, what are you doing there?
Oh, well, I've kind of run into a little bit of trouble, and I was hoping you might hear Mr. White out.
My God.
Are you spanking Youssef?
I am spanking him. He's been a very naughty boy. Actually, he's been a very good boy. But here's the thing. We are a terrorist organization. And before you ask, yes, we are very organized. And if we get any money, definitely harm will come to many people.
Wait, no, hold on a minute.
Don't listen to him. They just want the Christmas party.
No, yeah. I mean, that is true as well.
Are you going to use the money wisely? Or are you promising us right now that this is actually going to do harm to people?
Do harm. That is our whole thing.
Oh,
we bring down countries.
Oh my God. What do you want from me? Why me?
I will say in...
Do you think that maybe you shouldn't have wasted all the money on the wireless Q headsets?
Those are great. They're worth it. I will say in the interest of continuity, I'm not into killing women or children. I'm Mr. White. And you'll find that that figures in later. Maybe you've seen the 2015 film Spectre.
It might take two or three movies for this to happen, but it will happen.
Okay, so listen.
Get to the point, all right? She doesn't have all day. We have...
Gina, stop making this about you.
Well, we've got waffles coming.
Gina, did you have the cheese and then go to U2, or was it U2 and then the cheese?
We did both. We brought the cheese to the concert.
Oh,
is
like
Gina really necessary in this conversation?
Yes, I was there. Keep going. Wait,
Why don't you kidnap the man Gina went to the U2 concert with instead?
Oh no, Rick. Oh, believe me, he wouldn't be doing anything but complain.
Gina also works for the Treasury.
Yeah, I work for the Treasury, all right. The Treasury of my mind.
Oh God.
Good
what
one,
is
Gina.
That even? What does that even mean? The
I don't
Treasury
know.
Of my mind. I'm going to die. Why are you guys still talking
I'm glad
about
we kept
Gina
her
is
on
an
the
emotional
phone.
Vampire.
Listen, Vespa Lind, Gorley. Here's the deal. We have your boyfriend.
It's true. I'm right here.
Youssef. And we have kidnapped him. And we are going to kill him violently unless you help us by infiltrating the government that you work for.
I've seen all their chairs. None of them have bottoms.
Oh, my God.
That's right. We take rugby to ride to his plums.
Oh, God.
Vesper, we
don't
want to talk about this.
I'll do it.
What?
I'm going to do it.
You have no choice.
Well, she does have a choice.
She just said she's going to do it. She just said she's going to do it.
I'm going to go along with it and then see what happens.
Okay, here's what we want you to do. So, there's this guy, right? His name's Jim Bond or something like this.
Oh, Jim Bond. I know Jim Bond. He owns a tire store downtown.
No, not. That's a different one.
Oh.
No.
Well, he makes a great couscous. And you'll, when you taste it.
Oh, that could be him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
He has a daughter named Raffaella?
No, not the same one, no. So... He's going to go to this big poker game in Montenegro, right, at the Casino Royale. You've got to go and represent the Treasury.
But be careful, because there's no other games happening. It's just the one game. It's a weird casino.
Yeah. Listen to James Bonding next week. That would make sense. So what are you going to do? You're going to help us out and kind of be our double agent?
Well, you came to the right woman because I'm a fantastic actress.
All right. Well, can I say something about that?
What?
Well, I don't think you're the greatest.
Yes, I can. I'm very witty, and I look great in a low-cut dress.
I'm not catty. I just tell it like it is.
What is your resume? Can you tell us some of your credits?
Well, I was in a production of Barefoot in the Park.
Oh, no.
I love that movie.
It was community theater, and a kid played the guy.
Oh, but Redford and Fonda, I mean... Mwah.
We had lots of sexual chemistry. And also, to be honest, I've been with Yusuf 5 years now and he hasn't proposed.
What do you say to that, Yusuf?
Well, I got her a nice necklace.
I wanted a ring. You can imagine my surprise when on her anniversary it was this weird necklace. That's
it's an Algerian love knot. I've told you 1,000 times.
Well, and to be honest, he's got a bunch of those to give out. Sorry.
I have to plan my outfits around
the necklace. I'm going to die. Please help.
Okay, and we're out. Wow.
I mean, I really think I would have to just go along with it because, you know, what's so immediate is that they have the person you love.
Yeah, but okay, but morally, do you think that's correct?
No, I don't, because I think that one life for many lives is, you know.
Yeah, and usually I fall on the side of, like, the needs of the many over the needs of the few, but in this one, I couldn't do it.
It's the vagaries of it all, like, for me.
It's the what?
The vagaties.
There's no vagaties. Harm is going to come to many, many people. That's a given.
It's obtuse, though. It's like
pulling a Maria.
No, I don't think it is, actually.
To whom? You know what I mean? Like, it's like this terrorist organization.
To whom? You mean you value some lives over others?
For sure. Oh, what if this terrorist organization hates another terrorist organization?
No.
What if it's an Al-Qaeda?
But he's doing
what if it's an ISIS-Al-Qaeda situation, right? I'm going to go get money for ISIS, and they're going to then use the money to kill Al-Qaeda. I'm like, well,
I don't know. You're being like a traitor as well, because you're throwing your country under the bus.
Right.
That's how they get you, though. That's how they get you. I mean, it's easy when you're not seeing the faces of the people who are going to be hurt to be willfully ignorant, and I think that's what a lot of people do. But also, I don't think it's really realistic to expect one person up against something that's so huge to, I don't think you can judge them morally for going along with it. I really don't.
I think you can. I think you can, because it is it's a very selfish act to go, well, I love him and my life's on the line, so therefore everyone else has to suffer in response.
I don't think you can call that selfish.
Yeah, it goes beyond selfishness.
Yeah, I don't think you can call that selfish. I think if you, because you're not asking for this situation, it's being put on you and someone's life is at stake.
And I don't think you'd be, like, I don't think I'd be literally capable of saying, kill a man, do what you will with Amanda. Like, I would do everything in my power to the exclusion of even thinking about the rest of the thing to stop
them. I think that you're as a human, you wouldn't even let yourself, your defense mechanisms would jump up and you would do what Matt Myra is doing and just justify whatever you could to save the person's life. And that's human nature.
Okay, but that doesn't mean necessarily going along with it, right? What Vesper does in the movie is go along step by step until the end. She goes along with it until she falls in love again and then is like, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't go along with it.
That's almost more selfish.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, yes, you get put in life. You can't, when something happens to you in life that puts you in a situation where you're in between a rock and a hard place, and you go, well, but I didn't do this, so I need to take the route that makes me more comfortable and I get to come out kind of ahead. That is selfish.
Oh, but
to
she
me.
No, she sacrifices herself for Bond.
No, at the very end. But I mean, going along with the plan, like, yeah, I'm all for going, like, no, I'm not going to do it, and then doing everything in your power to, like, you know, stop them or
she
go
does,
to...
though, because she leaves her phone behind for Bond to find. It's a way for her to not betray her boyfriend and still help Bond in some way.
But that's at the very... Well, we're talking at the end of the movie.
Okay. Yeah, and we'll get to the part B of this, which is what happens afterwards.
But,
so,
yeah, I think that, you know, you're put in a position that's very difficult, and to agree with something that is morally wrong and hurts who knows how many people, to just go along with that in the moment and go, yes, I'll do it, is a morally wrong and selfish thing to
do. Yeah, I don't think you can call it selfish.
I could say you saying the more moral thing to do is to say no and sacrifice your partner and the love, your love, to potentially save many people. I don't think that you can call not doing that and saving your love selfish. I don't think you can.
But they'll just go down the line of, you know, treasury worker after treasury worker. Do you know what I mean?
That's another way to justify it. Like, imagine Craig is in this situation.
No, I know, but but the thing is, it's like, I can put whoever I want in this situation. It's, it, when you think about it, it's like it doesn't matter. What you're doing is giving a terrorist organization the ability to your action. I know you didn't choose it, but your action in saying I will do this for you is putting millions of lives in danger.
But what would I know? It's
yeah, one thing. We understand
it's
that.
Like, what would you? What do you think you would do?
I would say, I might. What I might do is go. Yes, I will go straight to the government or somebody. But it's not a loophole because it's you're saying, what would I do? And it's that's what I'd do. I'd say, yes, I'd go along with it and then be a double agent.
I might consider doing that, too. But yeah. That is a loophole for this question.
Right. Because you think they have like a gun to his head and they're tracking you. So you can assume.
Yeah. Let's assume if you do that, he'll be killed. What do you do? Craig.
Right. I can't. And I'm sure he would say the same thing, too. I cannot go along with it. All I can do is say no. And then I know I'm going to get killed as well because I was brought
That's
into this.
True. And, so, and honestly, if you really think about it, you're all going to probably end up dead, even
yeah,
if you try
that's
to
the thing.
Save
it's
him.
It's like, what does your life or your one boyfriend's life mean in a whole, you know, millions of other lives?
But
it means
also,
nothing.
So you could also say that they will probably find a way to do this anyway. So why can't you
well,
know?
Well, that's
like,
a mm-hmm. bad way to think. That's a bad because then
well,
you're,
I think you're being really judgmental about it. To be honest, I think that. You're being a little cold-hearted about it. Like,
how?
I don't think... I understand saying one thing is more moral to do the right thing, but then I think you cannot judge and say that's a bad thing to do someone who would save their lover in that situation.
But what I'm saying is it is a bad thing to do because it is an action you are taking.
The terrorist organization are the bad ones. Someone else is just trying to...
Yeah.
Right,
deal with it.
It's kind of like we're back to the baby in the village in a way.
Yeah,
that's how this whole thing started.
Yeah. That's easier though, I think.
Yeah,
yeah, the baby in the village.
Yeah, because you're with the people, you're with them.
Yes.
Like I think that's a big. Makes a big difference.
What I'm saying is, I get that if I was looking at Craig, the love of my life, in front of me with a gun to his head, and they were going, "If you don't." I'm looking at Craig. I'm also looking at myself. If he dies, I die because I'm there and they're telling me this thing. What are they going to let me go? No, I know. Basically, I've been put in a position where you're shit out of luck. So what you can do then is be selfish and go, well, no. I want to live and I want him to live. And so I'll do whatever you want. That is a selfish act as opposed to going just kill. I know it seems like brazen, but it's like,
well, I think presumably they've called you or something and say, we have your man, do what we want. So you're, let's say you're not in threat.
But you don't think they'd kill her if she said no. If she said
well, you
no.
could go straight to your government and get protection.
Right.
But your boyfriend's
well,
definitely
they have men
die.
Everywhere.
Right.
That's right.
I just don't think, I think it is wrong to put someone you love. All of these other people have people who love people.
But do you think you could really sit there with, to watch Craig with a gun to his head?
Well, I'm not watching
call.
Him.
Well, or just know.
Know that he's there.
Yeah, like you could actually make, you know that the minute you answer, you're actually sealed.
Right,
no,
I'm not. It wouldn't be an easy decision at all.
Well,
but,
I know, but you could do it. You think you could do it? I don't think I could do it.
Yeah. I think
I mean, it's like in a way you just want to like go for the gun. And if they pull the trigger and kill Dory, then I still go for the gun and kill myself.
Yeah. Right. But you're
but
not
maybe,
in the room.
But maybe if the person on the other end is like, it's okay. Like you go ahead. Like you don't do it. Don't do it. But the other person, if you were that person, what would you want your partner Oof. To do? Let you die?
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. I mean, I would have an easier time dying as that person than making the call for
sure.
Yeah,
definitely.
But the reveal on this also is that I guess when we get to part B, we can reveal.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I see where you're coming from totally, Maria. And I do think like that is, I just don't think you can call that selfish or wrong to make the other choice. Like, I think that actually is incorrect.
You're just handling a wrong or a selfishness.
No,
you're
but I think it, what I think is incorrect is putting, because it becomes, because what you're doing is you're putting yourself in this kind of victim position of like, well, this happened to me. I didn't ask for this. So I can make the, so I shouldn't have to make the decision. Basically, it's not
you don't think that's you could consider that person a victim?
Well, no, but you have to deal with it. You can't just throw and go like, well, but that's not, you can't, basically you can't say, well, that's not fair. I want to live and I want him to live. You're shit out of luck. You got put in this position, and what you need to do now as a moral human being is do the morally right thing. And it's, and instead of sitting, like being there and being like, well, I didn't ask for this, why should this happen to me? Doesn't matter, it happened. You know, like, I just think there's like this kind of wishy-washiness of
it's
like...
It's interesting because it's the same basic premise as that, that button that will change a train from killing one person to killing five. Mm-hmm. It's exactly the same thing, except the changed element is the loved one. And I find that changes it completely.
But it's also, you're not actually pulling a lever. You're literally just you're saying no. So that's an, it would be harder for me to pull a lever than it would to be like, I'm not going along with your plan. That's easier for me.
Oh, that's, it's way more difficult for me. It would be so easy to pull that lever because it's literally the question of five blank slates versus one blank slate. You don't know any of them, but this is a world of difference because you have a life, love, and like years of investment, and someone that you can, like, I don't even think of it as selfishness. I think of saving the person that means the most to me in the world. Like, I think of it as
means the most to you in the world.
But there's, it's not selfish. It's like, I just, selfishness almost doesn't even enter into it. It's on paper, it's selfish, but in real life, it's like, I can't, there's no option.
It's like, it's human nature.
I mean, really, what you have to do is say yes in order to buy yourself more time.
Well, that's what I would, if we were allowed loopholes, then I would do that for sure. But we're not allowed loopholes on this show.
Except for when we get to part B of all of this. But what ends up happening, which would be kind of bad, is that if you're thinking of, I'm the person who got kidnapped, well, you're going to now go work with some beautiful British secret agent, Jamie Bond.
And you,
Jamie,
are going to be, have been a mole who never loved me in the first place.
So that's what ends up happening really in the movie. But we all know where we stand now on what we think we would do or what we think is right to do. But now part B of the question is, what happens when you fall in love with the person you now have to work with?
Right, which makes me think, well, okay, so it's a moral dilemma. If you're working around James Bond, and you have to fall in love, right?
I know.
That's just no way around it when you're with Daniel Craig as James Bond.
Agreed.
There's just no way around it. There's just, you're falling, sorry, I don't know what to do.
I know.
He just puts a spell on you.
And he's also, at this point, demonstrated that he's been willing to die for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Wait,
it's wonderful.
When did he demonstrate that?
In the torturing thing, he's like, you can cut off my balls, you can do whatever, I'm not giving you the code. And it's more for Vesper than anything.
Disagree.
Well, back it up.
I think it's more for the mission.
Well, that
at
too,
that point.
But
he's not giving the code. There's no, like, I don't think in his mind, I don't think there's any doubt that he, I don't think that he thinks that him giving the code is going to do anything to spare Vesper. Mm. So I think that in his mind, he's like, well, fuck it. You're going to kill her anyway. Why am I going to give you the... Because he knows how these people operate. He knows, how...
But he does risk his life to save her when she's
kidnapped. Sure, when he thinks he can do it, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then I think Bond is very adaptive to his situations.
Oh, yes.
Just as a character. So I think when he's in that situation and is getting tortured in a chair... And, are you going to listen to the guy who's swinging this fucking hard ball at your testicles? Are you going to listen? Are you going to believe that if he gives the password, then she's fine? Are you going to believe that from him? No.
That's fair.
No.
That's fair. Okay. So then what happens? So Vesper now has to go kind of work with James Bond, but she's secretly being a mole to the terrorists. Mm-hmm. But she falls in love with James Bond, which I know that he's magic, so you can't help
it. Like, literally magic, you can't help.
But that also is kind of crazy that she has this guy she's risking her life for, and then meets some other guy and is just like, ooh.
But it does happen over like weeks or
months.
Yeah,
she does. She is very cold to him at first. Although they have, they have their little back and forth.
Oh, that's one of the best scenes in cinematic history.
In the,
on the train. Yes. How do you like your lamb?
Skewered.
Unsympathizes.
Well, it's also like, it, her...
One sympathizes.
I think her tactic should switch completely. Once she falls for Bond, she should then sort of be like, well, I guess I really don't care what happens to the ex-boyfriend now.
Well, I think the minute I met James Bond...
I got this sweet hunk of man over here.
And which is kind of almost... what she does, but not really. The minute I met James Bond, I'd be like, oh, he's super capable. I'm just going to tell him what's happening.
Yeah, I don't, that's exactly what yeah, I, that's what I would do. That's
but she, of, yeah. she plays it through to the end to still save Yousef because she doesn't know he's a double agent. And she's leaving a clue for Bond to help, but she's trying to keep him alive.
But why couldn't she just tell Bond, like, this is what I would do. Now, in the, I get it, we can't do loopholes, but yes, in the reality of the situation, I would say yes, and then go behind and cut off the plan as it happened. And without being able to do that, then I have to say no right off the bat.
She does try to do that. She won't give him the money. And the reason is because she knows that this money's going to fund terrorists. It's not because of Bond's
So
ego.
She thinks that this is all she needs to do is handle Bond's money. But what does that mean? Like, what is she doing for the organization?
For the organization, she's doing things like when he figures out Lashif's tell. He then informs them that the chief has a tell and Bond knows what it is. Now,
so she tells him.
Yeah,
she tells
but here's the. I mean, the reality of it all is it's a poker game, right? They have no control over how the cards are going to fall.
Yeah,
they have no control over the river. What they really should have done, and the easiest thing to do, and they do this at fucking Hollywood Park Casino and Commerce Casino, is the dealers can be in on this, right? So what they should have gone to, instead of going to a Treasury Department person who you don't know that's even going to be put on the case, like there's so many logic break-aparts in Casino Royale anyway. So like,
I don't know. That makes sense. There'd be some bureaucrat like actually has to issue the money.
But it's like, okay, so who's how many of our agents are boyfriend or girlfriend with Treasury Department people? Okay, so let's figure out. Okay, it's going to be.
They probably were thinking, who can we have to be a mole? And they could have looked at dealers or whatever. And then they went, oh, this guy works with us. And he's got a girlfriend who's in the Treasury. Let's do that.
Yeah, but I think you go with the dealer because the dealer can shuffle. They can stack the deck. They can shuffle it however they want to shuffle it. If you're a skilled shuffler, if you're a.
A shuffler. I'm a skilled shuffler.
We're arguing semantics. Like the parameters of this thing.
Okay. Yes.
Set.
So the parameters are set. But to what Amanda was saying earlier with Vesper just being able, like telling the tells to Quantum or to Lashif. Why not? Like Maria's saying, why not? The other side of it. Why not say to James, "Oh, by the way, I'm working." They have my boyfriend. Blah, 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 blah.
Why does Vesper also not just tell Bond's hands?
What?
To
his poker hands to Lashif.
Blink for Ace.
But she's not just there for that. She's there to get fake kidnapped so that Bond will follow her.
So they chose her because they knew Bond would like her. Too probably enough.
Presumably.
To
in the
he
book,
shouldn't have a reputation at that point. Do you know what I mean? Like Bond shouldn't have a reputation as a womanizing spy because he's a very new spy at this.
Well,
point.
He also becomes a womanizer because of this betrayal,
right?
But
right.
I think
She's hurting more people than she thought she would.
But, I know,
but I don't think it's supposed to be that like, oh, he'll save her because she's beautiful and they're in love. It's just his job. You know, like if she gets kidnapped, he's going to try to save her.
Now, I have something at the end that's always bothered me so much. And I know it had to happen, but that she lets herself die at the end when she's locked in that cage. Because now she, you know, she feels so guilty. But I'm like, ugh.
Why did she
do
that?
I think it was guilt, but I feel the same way because he clearly doesn't want her to die. Like he wants to either forgive her or save her.
Or figure out what the hell just happened. Yeah. Vesper, we need to talk.
In the book, she is there to lure Bond after they've been established on this case. And then when they escape, she sees that one-eyed man with the, you know, Gettler that you were so beautifully dressed up
Thank you.
At my 40th birthday.
Thank you.
DJ Gettler. So Maria was the DJ.
I was a good DJ too.
And she's paranoid that Smirsch is the name of the terrorist group in the books is going to kill her. And so she kills herself with sleeping pills and leaves Bond a big confessional note. And her boyfriend was not a double agent in that.
So I think she knows that either way she's dead meat.
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah,
I think
so, but why even go along with it if you know you're dead meat?
Well, because she probably didn't know.
You hope.
First,
I think that's what they say at the end of Casino Royale, too. I think Judi Dench says, well, I'm sure she hoped they would let her live.
Oh, yeah, she does. And she says she left you your phone because she knew you were you. She knew you would follow
but
that.
Bond won't hear it. The bitch is dead.
Oh, it's so sad.
My
God. And
when
he tries to give her CPR.
No.
If you guys have not seen Casino Royale, you don't have to be a Bond fan.
Oh my God, you guys.
It's Marie and I's favorite movie.
I can't get over it. The colors alone. Just the colors of the movie draw you in. She does wear too much makeup during the casino scene.
Yeah, I. She looks super sexy when she gets her makeover, but it's too much.
No, it's too much. She looks much better when it's just like
when she gets her makeover.
When she has just kind of like a muted lip.
Was that because it was 2006, or was that too much makeup for even then?
Even then.
Because
there's multiple points in the movie where she looks just very nice.
Yeah.
She's very nice.
She's my favorite Bond girl, hands down.
Yeah, well. So what would you do if you fell in love with the girl... you two. What if? Mm-hmm. Oh, should we do a little role play where we're?
Oh, maybe we should do a 4-person scene on the train. where we're having.
I don't know what that is, but I'm in whatever.
A 4-way, sexy back and.
Well, you're Vesper. I'm Gina, and then these are the Bond twins.
Okay, perfect.
The Bond twins.
James and James.
Yeah, James and James.
Can I join you?
I was just having some lamb.
Can I sit down too? What am I? Chopped meat?
Weren't you just having some chopped meat?
I was actually just having some chopped liver. Have a seat.
Thanks so much. My name's Gina, and this is my pal Vesper.
Vesper. Vesper Lind.
And I'm Jim Prime.
I'm Jim Subprime.
Oh, can I get you something to drink?
Oh, no, we're in a diner.
I'll have a glass of your finest burgundy.
Tell me, good one.
You what?
Tell me, good one. What did she just?
What you mean?
I'll have a vodka martini, shaken and stirred.
I'll have a vodka martini, one part Lillet, one part Gordon's gin, one part just a bit of like pickle juice. I call it a Gina martini.
Oh, I'll have a Shirley Temple.
Wait, I'm sorry, Gina. What did show me good one mean?
I've been talking to the waitress, and I said, tell me good one.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, because she's good at her job.
Oh, my God.
Gina, you've got a way
about just looking for a wine recommendation, and then you ordered a Shirley Temple.
Everyone leave me alone. Now,
I have no problem with what you're doing, Gina. You've got a sort of lust for life that I find, I don't know, just invigorating.
Wow, Vesper, take a look at this one. Now, he's a keeper.
So do you boys like trains?
Well, we're on one, aren't we?
I find it gets us from here to there in a straight line.
That's right. What are you two doing on a train? We're going to be in a secret poker game where we will try to win.
James?
What?
Oh, isn't that funny?
Family reunion.
We're heading to Montenegro. Right.
Isn't that funny? We're doing the same.
That's right. We're here. We're the money girls.
Wait, what?
Oh.
You're the money girls. Sent by the treasury?
Yeah, so we look at the British treasury.
Oh, you're our contacts. We told we would be met by two baddie broads.
Well, you can call me baddie, but don't call me a broad.
Some like it hot.
What cabins are you in?
1 and 2.
Not anymore. Now you're in our cabin.
Cut to the girls' bathroom. Vesper.
Wow.
Now, when you got a look at Jim, you just forgot about...
Ricky.
No. What's his name?
Yusef. Cut to the girls' bathroom. We're in here, too.
We like to go in here. We find it's cleaner.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. And scene. That was sexual tension through the roof.
Wow.
Out the caboose.
Our version of Casino Royale is still better than the 1967 movie version.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. I think. What do you guys think about falling in love with someone else? Do you think that that's a
that I do think is wrong.
Yeah. That.
How do you mute those feelings?
I mean, it'd have to be... I don't see how you could, because I don't think you're capable to fall in love with someone when the person you love, his life is on the line.
But
like, would you even be open to that?
I don't...
Yes, if it were James Bond.
But this
you know,
is extreme circumstances.
Yeah, too. And I don't think... I think also they, you know, they fell in love after in that shower scene when he licks her fingers.
Oh, my
so
God.
I don't know
God,
how
you guys, if you haven't seen it, oh, my God.
All right,
God.
Cut to the shower. the four of us.
Now you're bleeding. You're bleeding from the hands.
Hold on. Eight more to go.
Guys, I really actually need the shower. What are you all doing in here?
Jim, please.
I've got to get licking. Back down, but I smell. I just went to the gym.
We're playing.
Why are you all in the shower?
Licking head, shoulders, fingers, toes.
And cut. Take five, everyone.
Good work.
I think she's so desperate that I think you actually could be susceptible to fall in love.
Serious question for all of you, moral and or otherwise. Have you not in your lives ever been with someone and then fallen in love with someone else and then had to do the breakup and then float
no,
over
I've
to
never
the
been
person.
In love. Well, no, I haven't been in love. I've never been in love.
This is why you're so easy to throw Craig aside.
I agree.
No, I've never been in love and then fell in love with someone. I mean, right. I've liked someone or like, you know, but yeah. I've never, like, I can't imagine being with Craig and meeting someone and being like, oh my God, like there's no way.
But I don't think Vesper and this guy were that serious, to be honest.
Yeah, probably not.
Maybe he just bought her that necklace she felt she owed him.
No one's ever bought me a necklace.
He doesn't have half the charm as Craig because you see him in Quantum of Solace.
Yeah. Oh, it is like, it is... a way let down, you know what I mean? Like, you're like, that's the
well
guy?
He's got that like Euro trash charm.
Yeah.
Do you remember did you see Quantum?
I saw it, but not since it came out.
Maybe we should have you guys on for Quantum.
I'd love to see.
He looks like a guy who spends his time shopping at the Ferrari clothing store,
right.
But
or
doesn't own a Ferrari.
Yes, oh no, you're right. That's
the biggest
that's
insult.
Never
I've
been
ever
a better
heard.
Description.
I'm gonna go pretty crazy right here. I'm gonna say something that might be controversial.
Wow. Okay.
That you, Maria?
I don't know if Vesper Lynd is capable of love, because I wonder. She seems very damaged. Mm-hmm. She seems very like she has been wronged multiple times throughout her life, and she doesn't. I don't think she knows what she wants. And I don't know if she fully was in love with James or was fully in love with Yousef. I think she was maybe searching for something that she was never going to be able to find.
But it's probably not her fault, because let's say she hasn't even had to decide whether she's in love until this man's life is in danger. She's going to feel feelings that most earthlings have never felt in their entire life. Same thing with James. When she's in this extreme circumstance and he's saving her life and he's almost killed... How do you know what love is in that situation?
Yeah, I don't know. She's definitely guarded. She's definitely guarded, and she let it down a little bit with James. But
just a little, but I don't even know. Honestly, I don't even know if we'd like what we saw if she let her guard down. She might be a mess.
No, we do see her. Her guard's down.
I don't know. I can't imagine her laughing really hard.
She's laughing when they're in Venice and they're getting out of bed and she throws the pillow.
Oh, yeah.
And
that always seems odd to me. That seems like an alien.
Yeah, she's about to then just go to the bank. I know. Like, I think immediately following that, she leaves.
She's acting.
To go to the bank.
Yeah. Well,
she also thinks that she's going to the bank, but she hopes that it will all resolve itself.
Because she wants him to follow her. She leaves her phone. He is meant to follow her.
She should have just told him right then, hey, I'm going to the bank. I might be killed. Could you follow? Could you like walk like two steps behind me?
I know. I like that green dress, though.
It's red.
Earlier. No, but then there's a green one earlier.
Oh, yeah, when they're in Switzerland, when they were the Switzerland guy.
Oh, yeah.
Poor Mathis.
Well, so final thoughts, shall we?
It's a tough one.
Yeah.
That's what makes the movie so good.
Yes.
Because it's not open-closed. Like, there's some ambiguity, and every time I've seen that movie so many times, and I still... don't fully understand who's pulling what strings at, and it doesn't feel like a shortcoming with the movie. It just feels like a Phantom Menace.
Wow,
nice.
That's cool.
I stick by my choice of I understand how theoretically it's not morally correct, but I think I would have to see how it all plays out and just go along with it and see how it all plays out.
I agree with you 100%, and that's why we would take good care of each other.
But destroy the world.
Yeah, see you later, Matt and Maria. We're going to live forever in happiness.
We're all going to end up dead.
Not
Matt,
me.
What is your final thoughts?
I think I would say yes, and then I would try to out...
But that's a loophole, Amanda. I know it's a
loophole.
I don't know if that's a loophole.
If you're accepting along with it,
you're accepting the circumstances, but I would try too.
At the end of the day, what happens is if I cannot find the loophole, then I'm going along with it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Same.
See, what I'm doing is I'm going, I'm saying yes, going to the government, trying to figure it out. If if that's not working, then I go to them. I'm not going to do it.
Is this? Are you sure you're not being selfish? You just want out of your relationship, and this is an easy way out.
No. I'm just me and Craig really stick up for the little guy. Knick-knack.
Full circle. Knees and toes.
All right,
what an interesting discussion.
Yeah, we can't believe it. So this is a time-sensitive Dear Big Ones, and it's someone that really needs our help.
Okay. Dear Big Ones, my boyfriend and I are already planning to get married, and I knew it was only a matter of time until we got engaged because we had picked out the ring together and everything back in July, in January. We are going on a trip together to New Orleans in 2 weeks, mid-April, which is why there is kind of a deadline. And I had a feeling that he was planning to propose on the trip, which had been hinted at when my sister asked me when I was planning to get my nails done. However, it was just confirmed because my best friend, who we are staying with on our visit, sent me a text 2 days ago asking me what I would like for my proposal. My question is, how surprised should I act? How prepared should I be? I am a little bit of a control freak, so it is very tempting to tell my best friend exactly what my vision is, but is that taking away from his surprise? Should I trust that he might have a nice plan and I should give him a chance to carry it out? But I don't know if his plan will be as good as the one I would plan. Also, I was planning on buying a new dress because during this trip I will be attending another friend's bridal shower, but should I buy more than just one dress in case, or can I wear the same dress? This is kind of a long Dear Big One, but even if it's not on the air, I would love to hear from you ladies. Okay, all right. And I'm not going to say who this is from, but thank you for writing in and thank you for listening.
Proposal Pam, we'll call her.
Proposal Pam. Okay, girl, it's the proposal. It's let go of any expectations. It's not going to be what you think. It's going to be special and great in its own right. And just have zero expectations because in my experience and in every single woman I know who's gotten engaged, it's always real and it's life. It can be awkward. It's just not going to be perfect like you see in a movie. Just enjoy it for what it is. Yeah. And it's going to be sweet because you guys love each other.
Yeah,
I agree. I think the whole beauty of a proposal should be like whatever he wants to. I feel like he's probably asking people because he knows that she has an idea. So he's asking the friend and the friend is going back channel to her. Mm-hmm. If I were her, I would say, let it happen to me. And then I bet he'd come up with some nice, even if it's very simple or straightforward. Also, but that's the beauty of a proposal. It should be honest, I think.
But now she's going to be like really on edge the whole trip.
Yeah.
And let's say it's not happening on this trip for some reason.
Well, no, I think it, because the friend said, what would you, but
what
I guess
he gets
maybe
wind,
then,
you know, and then he's like, well, I can't do it now. Maybe
right.
Maybe what if he listens on the way to this podcast?
Maybe he does it at the airport on the way to the trip. That'd be a fun way to do it.
Yes, I had a friend
on a plane.
That.
People would clap. It'd be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But
you're in an airport.
He's not listening. but I think that for her, she should remember the following thing. The proposal is really the last ditch effort of the guy to have control over an event that will happen in your lives. You have the whole wedding to go exactly how you want the wedding to go, because that's really going to be your day. And this is a moment for the guy to sort of try to surprise you and get that little downbeat of like, yes, and then you guys move on with your day.
Yeah.
And then if you want to take pictures afterwards, change. Put the dress on you want to wear.
I totally agree. So when we got engaged, when Matt and I did, I had very little makeup on. We were just decorating the Christmas tree.
I had a ton of makeup on.
And it was just a very like sweet, intimate moment. And then we went out to dinner and I got dressed up and we had had the waiter take a picture of us.
Right.
You know, I just think.
Where'd you go to dinner?
At Parkway Grill in Pasadena.
Oh, I've never been.
It's really nice. Yeah. So I just think like. You know, you're a control freak. That's okay. But don't worry about how you're going to react. Just be authentic and whatever happens is great. But just don't let your brain nitpick what your fiance
it's
does.
It's just it's not about what you're going to be able to tell your friends or how you look or whatever. It really is a moment between you and the person you love. And it is a bridge between like now and, you know, a place where you're going to have your hands in every last bit of the planning. Yeah. So it's like, stop having these expectations. You guys picked out the ring together. You already know that's going to be fine. Yeah. And that's like a big... like that's always been a fear of mine. Like if I looked, like saw that this ring was like an ostentatious type thing where I was like, this isn't me at all, that I'd be like so nervous that I was saying yes to someone who didn't really like know my style, even though that seems crazy. But that's already taken care of. Now let him just be himself and do what he wants to do and just accept that. And I think you're fine.
The joy of this should be that you don't know what it is or have a conception of what it is. Like that, I think, without overstepping my bounds, like you probably shouldn't have a preconceived notion of what your engagement should be. That's the whole point of an engagement, you know?
Yeah, I don't know that I've ever, well, I'm asking, I guess, you ladies, in your mind, I know often the trope of like, oh, I've thought of my wedding day forever since I was a little girl, so on and so forth. But is the proposal really something you have thought about?
Not really, no. Yeah. But when once I met Matt and I knew we probably were going to get engaged, I was kind of just like would ponder what it would be like.
I know what I wouldn't want, but I know that Craig would know that I like at a like a sporting event or like, you know, something where
you're a straightforward flash mob girl.
God. Oh, yes, yes, yes.
If he is taking her to WrestleMania in New Orleans to propose to her at WrestleMania.
I'm assuming he's going to the Live and Let Die filming location.
Anytime we go to City Walk, I think today's the day.
But Matt, were you heading that because you think maybe women often think of their wedding day, men sometimes think of their proposal, what they would do. I think that's true.
Yeah. I don't never thought of my wedding. I always thought of like what the proposal would be like, you know, because I know.
Because the girl never said yes. Like, you would always propose and she'd say no and you go, oh.
Back to the drawing board.
But I would say no in very funny ways in my mind.
Oh, yes, that's nice.
So, yeah, I think for that, I think she should absolutely just, bit of advice. So, yes, let him do what he's going to do. Don't worry too much about it. You can start worrying when you're planning your wedding day. But the beauty of the proposal is it's hopefully an intimate event that not many people are going to be a witness to. And then when you take photos later, put the dress on that you want to put on. Follow up, please do not just post a photo of your hand with the ring on.
Oh, yes, just
pet peeve.
Please,
and no one cares about it as much as you do, honestly.
Yeah, exactly.
And just remember that. But like, honest to God, like this is a moment between the two of you. And the more you think like, oh, what dress or like the pictures, and that's all fine if you want it to be with you and, you know, but know that no one's going to care about those pictures as much as you think they
and
will.
It's not going to be perfect. And neither is your wedding and neither is your marriage. And that's because it's real.
Well, yeah.
And it's better that it's not perfect.
It'll be perfectly imperfect.
Yes.
And Anna, Amanda and Matt have a great DJ. They can.
Oh, God.
Yeah, DJ Gettler.
But I would also say, regarding your dress question, if it's not stressful for you to buy a dress or it's not too much of a strain on your budget, treat yourself. Go get another dress and feel super cute on your trip and have so much fun.
Yeah, but then don't be weird if she like is wearing heels and a dress and he's like wearing a button down or like a open shirt or whatever, t-shirt.
Yeah, follow his lead. Whoa.
No, that's let her do whatever she wants and what she
feels but
like.
Then I don't want her to be like walking through cobblestone streets being like, oh, I can't believe you didn't tell me I shouldn't wear heels.
Like they're going on a hike.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you should take your cue from,
whatever
you're
wearing.
Going.
If he comes out in sweatpants, then, you know,
have fun in New Orleans.
You know what they always say, dress for the proposal you don't want.
Yeah, but just let go of any expectations and I'm just worried for her because I understand the kind of person she is and I can relate. Don't let your brain spiral about it, about what it wasn't. Just focus on the good. And this is the guy you're marrying. You're the planner in the relationship. So don't expect it to be exactly what you would do.
Just
but it's going to be perfect for what he, you know, is able to do.
Also, if you don't want to buy another dress, I recommend Rent the Runway.
I love Rent the Runway. You're going to
love a sponsorship.
Yes. Yeah, you're going to need it for all your wedding
proposals. Use the promo code EXCELLENT. For Rent the Runway.
Excellent.
Get yourself a couple bucks off courtesy of Matt and Dory.
Oh, there you go. Excellent. That's excellent as an egg.
That's nice.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay, guys. Well, I think this has been such a great
episode. I can't believe it.
A fabulous crossover.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for doing this. And check out next week on James Bonding, where Maria and Amanda will return for Thunderball.
Oh, guys, my casino joke will finally make sense.
Yeah. And then I'll do my outro. Hey, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Where can people find, so for our listeners, I know there's a lot of James Bonding listeners right now, but for our listeners, where can people find James Bonding, or, you know, look up you guys, or if they want to see what you guys are up to?
We have a social media account, a couple of them that are run by our head of social. We call her S. It's Emily Schmemily. At James Bonding Pod on Twitter, right? I think that's our... Oh, I know, it's actually at Bond James Bonding.
Oh, that's fun.
Isn't it?
Yeah, no, because there wasn't enough space.
Bond. Well, the point is, well, type in James Bonding into your search field.
James Bonding Pod.
Yeah, at James Bonding Pod on Twitter. That'll get you to everything you need to get to. He is at Matt Gourley, G-O-U-R-L-L-E-Y. And I am Matt Myra at Matt Myra, M-I-R-A. And that's where we are.
That's right.
Well, great. Well, thank you guys so much. As always, you can find us on Gmail at the big ones podcast at gmail.com and on Twitter at @thebigonespod. We've got a Patreon page that we'd love for you guys to subscribe to.
And for all the James Bonding listeners, please subscribe to The Big Ones. This is just a little taste.
Yeah,
please do. Help these, who are probably some of your favorite guests, out, like, by subscribing to their show. It will help them immensely.
Yeah, it really will, because we're not getting a lot of listeners, and we want listeners.
Yeah, we love the listeners.
We do all right.
Well, we get a lot of great listeners.
We love our listeners.
They're being modest. They have outpaced cereal. No one's ever seen anything like this. They're getting 4 million downloads a week.
And that's the breakfast product. They're getting more downloads than people that buy cereals.
No, we'd love more listeners, and you know, we're just happy to be in the podcast world.
It was a very fun premise. It was a good conversation.
Thank you. Yeah, I thought that was great, and you guys are great guests.
Thank you for having us on.
Well, thanks for listening to The James Big Bonding. Ones.
We'll James return. Big Ones.
James
Big Ones will return.
The Big James.
With Thunderbolt. James Bonding Podcast.
Hey everyone, Scott Aukerman here, host of Comedy Bang Bang, and thanks for listening to this show. And I want to tell you, I have a great episode of my show, Comedy Bang Bang, floating around out there in the internet. Our good friend John Hamm, the madman himself, he's out talking about his new movie, Beirut. And we have Paul F. Tompkins and Jess McKenna and Zach Reno from the Off Book podcast. It was a really fun time, and it's a good episode. So go check it out. You can subscribe to Comedy Bang Bang on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or wherever, honestly, you want to. I'm not here to tell you where to do it. Or I guess I just did. Anyway, Comedy Bang Bang, John Hamm this week. Check it out.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the Improv Fantasy Podcast, Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. Eight nuts.
Rachel Bloom.
You all see my collection of men corpses and one woman.
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins has crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.